Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
All right, how do I sound? I got a new what do you call this? Little fuzzy thing over my microphone.
The wind
Wind
guard?
filter, pop
Wind?
filter, I don't know what you call
Yeah.
them.
Yeah. Triple. No, but the yeah, it's good that you it's good that you're investing in this
Oh, this
empire.
is way cheaper than the other thing. I had that cool looking one. That's the little wire mesh disc that hovers over the microphone. But it's not facial hair friendly, and it would always get caught in there. And then like as I would back away, it would like pluck it, and you would hear like a little like piano string sound if it was loud enough. So I figured I'd give one of these fuzzy guys a try and see if it prevented that from happening.
Well, that's good. That's good news. I'm happy for you.
It's very exciting news over here in my personal home studio.
Yeah, I just have one of the foam thingies.
Yeah, it looks silly with the foam thingy on it. I like the other thing looked better, but this will probably work better.
Well, I mean, I don't particularly care about aesthetics. I have a laptop sitting on top of a CD case as a shock absorber, and a
You mean like what? Like a folder, right? A CD folder?
not a full folder, just the one that was like disc single disc size, but like 20 discs,
Yeah.
one of the tiny ones, not the big old binders. So that is. The laptop is perched on top of that, so that way that it's a shock absorber. And that is on top of the table. And on the table is a hand towel that's folded. And then the tiny tripod that comes with the ATR2100 USB is perched on top of the tiny hand towel. Again, shock absorber. And then that has a USB cable that runs to a USB to USB-C adapter, so that I can plug it into the computer. And it's just the magic of podcasting.
It's a very impressive life hack that you've got there with your folding towel and your CD case and
I am nothing if not impressive with my towel.
It's good. You should put that on top of your resume. I'm
Yes.
nothing if not impressive.
Yeah, impressive towel will be my new Twitter handle. But
No, we're going by
no.
real names now.
Yeah, I know. So any who any what? We aren't here to discuss our audio gear, unless one of us was taking somebody else out for a spin on their first day of getting acclimated to a new job in podcasting. In which day we in which case we would expose them to the corrupt underbelly of podcasting
The
that
harsh
they're.
realities of what it's really like in the podcasting streets.
Yes, and the because you know. Somebody did that one thing in Las Vegas that one time, and now Casper's out to get somebody, and they need their money.
There are a lot of plot lines in this movie. You think it's about one thing, it's really maybe about another thing.
Which is in turn about another thing.
We speak, of
Layers.
course, about the movie Training Day, starring Denzel Washington for the featured month of Denzel Wagashington. Still, we should have removed the ish after the August.
I don't know. There's no really great way to do that, but
Well,
I
Denzel
no, see,
Wagastington
look.
Wagastington would have been
Yeah.
maybe a little easier if you didn't have the Wagastington whatever. Anyway.
I would say Wagushdington, but that's just me.
Like Augusta, like the golf course.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would work. But yeah, this is another Denzel Washington movie. It's a good Denzel Washington movie by my estimation. But based on your reactions to the movie, it sounds as though you've never seen this movie before. Is that correct?
It would be correct.
Oh my goodness! What were you
Yeah,
doing in 2001 that you missed this movie?
I don't know necessarily,
It
because
seems like you hung out with the appropriate number of dude bros that played, Transformers and Bad Boys and stuff. Like, this should have been in their rotation.
you would think, because they like the aforementioned Bad Boys 2 nonstop and American Psycho and all kinds of other things and Fight Club and stuff. So I can only assume that the people I was hanging out with were losers. that is
Perhaps this one
perhaps
was too
too harsh.
esteemed for them
Yeah.
because this won a this won an award. This won an Oscar
Sure
award
did.
for best actor from Denzel.
Well, he did some good acting.
Yeah, did you actually enjoy the movie? This being your first viewing?
Yeah, I will just quickly summarize my thoughts since you have inquired so politely. I had not seen this, and I was not sure if I was going to like this, so I kind of put it on a shelf of like maybe someday. And then
someday maybe you'll watch it 17 years later.
Yeah, and so this obviously was the reason to do it. And I watched it right before we were recording the thingy, and I was a little surprised because there were parts of it that, in terms of like movie construction, I had some nitpicks about, but other parts where it was just like, you know, this is an incredibly solid thing in this other aspect of it. So I'm a little on the fence. I would definitely, I believe that Denzel Washington deserves an award for this, several awards, give him awards. Ethan Hawke, not so much. sorry,
well,
Ethan.
You know, he's a rookie, so yeah. You can cut him some slack.
Yeah, I mean, he's there and he participates. He doesn't do anything like embarrassing. And I believe he is believable in the role that he has cast as Jake Hoyt, Officer Jake Hoyt, who is, you know, a up and coming rookie and who is chastised as being from Starbucks, I believe, at one point in the film, which I think, yeah, Ethan Hawke, good, that works.
He's been a cop for 19 months, which is it's a short period of time to get this interview with Alonzo's unit here, but he's real good, apparently. He was a high school football all-star or something, we learned throughout the course of this movie, and he wants to make detectives, so he's putting in his time in a real like hardcore unit to see if he can hack it out in the field.
Yeah, his ambition will be his undoing, in a manner. But yeah, this plays with expectations because you go into this knowing that Denzel Washington is not a nice person, and that he gets things done in a sort of extrajudicial way.
What's the first thing in the movie that clues you into the fact that he's not a super nice guy, aside from the fact that maybe you were vaguely aware of the premise from before watching the movie?
I would say that the being aware of the premise from before watching the movie was probably my first clue, but ignoring that...
Were you thrown off when he called him in the morning to tell him to bring his gun and hung up on him?
No. The whole thing about like, oh, we don't go to the roll call thing, we do this, and then, you know, the diner stuff and the attire and the car, it's like, yeah, you know, little different. And Ethan Hawke's like, yeah, this isn't from the motor pool, and he's like, of course not, you know, he's gotta blend in and do his stuff. But it's really the first I would say drug bust that is your clue that things are not as they seem. Not just that Denzel Washington might play a little loose with laws or something, but that he plays incredibly loose with laws, and that the moment where you're like, oh, he's not a good person at all, is when he pressures Jake Hoyt into consuming the drugs that they have acquired, which he says are it's just bad weed, but of course it's not, it's PCP.
I have a slightly different here, to ask you a side question. Did you watch Chappelle's Show when it was on?
Some of it.
So you're probably familiar with the Wayne Brady episode then?
Yes.
Okay. So you probably know more about this movie than you thought you knew coming into it. At least now you know where all of those things come from.
Yes. This is that would be true. It is definitely a case where you see the reference before you see the movie, which I'm not alien to, of course, because you grew up watching cartoons, which are, of course, referencing movies you haven't seen because they're from 20 plus years before you were alive. But with this one, there is no shocking twist and turn that he is bad. It's mainly just like, when will Ethan Hawke figure this out? Let's just watch that vacant expression on his face and see as he pieces it together.
At no point did you feel like in the world that this movie is painting the picture of, Denzel is is acting in a way that is what he has to do to get his job done. You didn't buy any of his spiel that this is just the way it is out here. If you want to take down these big criminals, you let the little guys go, you slap them on the wrist or slap them on the crotch with the butt of your gun, and you send them on their way, and then you take down the big guys when you need to take them down. You didn't buy any of that stuff.
No. But again, that I may have been spoiled on that from, like, culture and the world in which we live in, etc. So, you know, I
just never really wanted to make detective as much as Officer Hoyt wants to make detective.
Right. Well, you know, it's hard to say. Like, if I had watched this when it premiered in September of 2001, then I may have a different... I might have been lulled into a false sense of security at certain points in the film where Denzel Washington is gaslighting Ethan Hawke, which is fun to watch him manipulate Ethan Hawke, because Ethan Hawke is definitely...
manipulatable?
Yes, malleable.
He literally says, I'll do anything you want when they first get together and they're driving, and you can kind of just see he smirks and says, like, you know, it's good. And it's not... It might just be because he's happy to have a compliant recruit in his group, or it might just be that he's literally planning on stabbing you in the back if you do anything that could harm him, and it turns out to be that one.
Yep.
It's actually really fun to watch on second and third times to catch, like, all of the little bits here and there. Like, you know, when he's on the... After they shoot Roger and steal the money, and he's, you know, taking a phone call and throwing the money in the back of the car, and he, you know... Ethan Hawke's on the sidewalk, still sort of dazed, and he slaps on the roof of his car and tells him to get in there. He, you know, he's got that one little line. I don't think I caught it the first time where he says, like, make sure that bathtub's clean. He's talking to Smiley about, you know, bringing him over there to have him killed. And then right after that, he gives him that very long, impassioned speech about, like, you know, you got to play the game, and then you can change it from the inside out, but you got to, this is the way it is. I'm sorry to expose you to it. He's already made the call to have him killed, so it's fun to watch the little bits and pieces along the way where you can tell, like, oh, he's done.
Yeah, I mean, I caught the line because I thought it was strange, but I didn't piece it together until we literally went to the bathtub, and I was like, oh, that bathtub.
Yeah,
that makes more sense now.
Mm-hmm. It was a nice bathtub. It's a little odd that they have the two shower curtains, unless that bathtub is used exclusively for insanguinating people, but, you know, it's what you gotta do sometimes.
Usually you have, like, a vinyl clear layer, and then you have, like, the dressy outer part. So that's what they did.
Well, that's only in fancy Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. You know, this particular neighborhood, they can only afford the one.
Yeah. Well, actually, I have a sliding glass door. Ooh. That leaks. So that's also fun. But I did put a decorative shower curtain rod over it with a shower curtain because I would like to hide it sometimes because it is an eyesore. Because
you have a shower curtain and a slider.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
We are how many years into this podcast and I'm learning new things about you still.
Yeah.
So do you keep them like is it like a dual, like two shower curtains and you have them like pinned to the left and right during normal usage, and then like when people are over you just cover it up?
No, because I'm not living in the 1980s with Ralph Lauren bathroom textiles. No, this is just a single curtain on little metal loops.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And I usually leave it open because it's just annoying. But if somebody were to come over, I have closed it because
you don't entertain there much. You people in LA, you go out to places.
Right. You've never been to my place. The several times you've been to LA.
That is accurate.
Yes.
Considering I've seen you two of the times that I've been to LA. I've met you twice in person, right? Well, three times, I guess. Two times in LA, and neither of those times did I go to your apartment.
Yeah, well, you're forgetting I also met you for your wedding and
that doesn't count because that's not in the proximity of your apartment.
Right, yeah, but you said you've met me three times, so it's more than three.
When was the other one times?
When we went to the tiki bar that was underneath the old garage thing, and then we went to that restaurant and you said, why did you pick this place? And I said, because you recommended it.
I gave you a list, and you guys selected it.
Why did you put it on the list if you didn't want to go?
Because you were looking for something in close proximity. It's literally across the street anyway. It was fine, except for the musician.
Yeah, that was weird. Here, sit right next to the musician. No, thank you.
At least it was sort of an acoustic-y type set. Anyway, back to the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I promise never to murder you in my tub. But
thank you, I appreciate that.
While I said that this movie at no point was I like, this is the secret part where Denzel like comes forward and we find out that it was all for the greater good. Like, I at no point was I on board with that thinking, because of possibly external sources. But there were several moments in the film where like, I still have no idea what's going to happen next. Like, plot-wise, it is a mystery what is going to occur from one scene to another. How we're going to move these chess pieces around the board. So,
were you surprised when he shot Roger?
No, I thought he would shoot Roger. So that was I got that one. Check. But the card scene, I think, was probably the most surprising scene in the movie for me. Because like Ethan Hawke, I was actually like, oh, so he just wandered off somewhere and he's doing the businessy thing and, you know, whatever, they're going to get back together and leave after whatever.
So the one thing you did buy was that he's got like appliances that he seizes from people and keeps in his trunk and he passes them out to people to be sort of a good citizen, but not really a good citizen, because basically he's using everyone that he could possibly use. Like, he does a favor for them, they do a favor for him.
Well, I thought the appliances might like have something illegal inside of them.
And they did. They have big stacks of money inside of them.
Yes. So, like, I didn't think he was actually being a good person or anything. But yeah, it was definitely a scenario where I didn't anticipate things unfolding the way that they did, where he is lulled into a false sense of security by the people playing the card game, and I in the audience am like, don't give them your gun. Don't give them your gun. You idiot. Don't do that.
It doesn't matter if you give them your gun. They've already shown that they all have guns too. So
yeah. Well, no, but that just means that you don't have one.
Right. But so, it's this whole thing about like rubbing elbows with the criminals, right? Like, this is the world that you're operating in when you're in this guy's unit. So like, you're constantly surrounded by these people that you have no idea whether or not they're going to like help you, probably for their own purposes, or just immediately kill you. Mm-hmm. And you got to kind of act cool around him. And he does his best to act cool, and then doesn't work out super well for him.
No. I have to say, that might be my favorite scene in the movie, because it all just kind of comes together in an interesting way. The card game and the people around the table are all quite different from one another. They had unique characteristics and traits. And they go on to the bathroom to execute him, but not before they search him for money, because you don't want the money to be covered in icky blood stuff. So,
or at the very least, you probably want to, like, you know, destroy his ID. Like, you don't want to throw out a dead body that has a driver's license still in the pocket.
True. So they get something that's a payoff for an earlier scene, and then that gets him out of that situation that he would have died in. And then we get to actually the really, I think, interesting finale of the film. But up to this point, you know that whatever the scenario is that they walk into, Denzel is going to do whatever it is that a cop should not do, because he's corrupt and will try to work the system in certain ways. So, like, with their first stop where Ethan Hawke is on PCP, but he sees the person being raped in an alley and he jumps out of the car, Denzel Washington's like, I don't have time for this. Like, I don't need to deal with this stuff, these shenanigans. Like, that's not for me. But he lets Hoyt take care of that situation, and then they get back into the car because he doesn't have time to book them and do all that other stuff.
He's only got enough time to be amused by watching Ethan Hawke fight these two crackheads.
Yeah, because Ethan Hawke is not 100% because of what Denzel had previously done to him. Alonzo Harris had previously done to him. I feel bad sometimes on this podcast when I'm attributing the actions of criminal behavior to the actors, but
I feel like it helps clarify for people who haven't watched the movie in a while or just kind of forgot character names or something.
Yeah, but please be aware. I know that Denzel Washington does not perpetuate crimes as a LAPD officer, and that it is the fictitious character of Alonzo Harris.
I do believe that he is as calm and cool in stressful situations as this character, probably.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Another thing that you get from casting Denzel Washington is miles and miles and miles and miles and miles of charisma, because he is very charismatic. When he's being evil, when he's not being evil, when he's being ambivalent, he has charisma. That is an incredibly important attribute for the character of Alonzo Harris, because Alonzo Harris is supposed to be this kind of seductive, corruptive force in the movie. So you have to believe that he has an effect over people when he talks to them, that they would go along with what it is that he is saying. So, like, if you had reversed these roles and you had, you know, Ethan Hawke as Alonzo Harris, I'm not sure I would really feel that same charismatic vibe. Sorry, Ethan. But Denzel Washington...
He's just nervous and twitchy.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, again, why he was cast correctly in the role that he is in. But Denzel Washington just has... charisma in every role that I've ever seen him in, I think. Like, I can't think of a role where he was just like, I am 100% phoning this in and do not care.
You know, if you were going to switch Ethan Hawke and Denzel Washington's characters, you would have to replace Ethan Hawke with Kieran Culkin.
Sure. Yeah,
I think he could be cool under pressure.
You need a twitchier, wormier guy, I guess. But... I think that is really a testament to Denzel's acting capabilities. Again, it is no surprise that he would win an award for something that involved this performance in this movie. But he also doesn't... How should I say this? Except for a couple of moments, he's not chewing the scenery. I find that there are some where, like, I'm the mayor of this place... where you might be chewing the scenery just a tiny bit, teeny tiny bit, but the rest of the time, I think that he has a very reserved but present performance, where he's not constantly shouting or anything like that. But
no, he's able to play the exactly what you would want the character to play. He has a very calm confidence such that he would not feel timid or scared in any of these situations where he might be walking into a very dangerous place or scenario, and he can keep his calm and sort of still be his leadership role and get people to do the things he wants to do, because he's confident that he can control the situation either through manipulation or he's just going to start shooting at people.
Yeah. And while I say that I can guess his motives for things, you don't necessarily know the actions that he's going to participate in. So one thing that Antoine Fuqua and the cinematographer Mauro Fiore captured in many of these scenes was this very interesting performance, this sort of Denzel thinking and doing what he's planning out, everything that he's going to do next inside of his mind kind of stuff. So you, like the scene with Roger, where they go in there with the corrupt cops. And that scene, you have Denzel sitting on that couch where the couch is blocking the light across his face, like Godfather style. Well, inverted Godfather style, because in Godfather, you don't see the eyes. But in this one, all you see is Denzel's eyes. And
it's a very good shot.
Yeah, it's very
good lighting.
Yeah, and then there are the other scenes where immediately right after that, where he's standing up there and he's talking about how things are going to go, and there is this slow Grinch smile that Denzel does that plays perfectly in the scene, and there's just like this perfect beat of time for it to occur. So you see him figuring out how he's going to manipulate Ethan Hawke in the scene right there, which makes you believe like you're right there inside of the environment of this picture. So that is movie making, people. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Now I'm just like remembering all the little bits and pieces.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's...
This movie score sucks, though.
I figured you would have an opinion. It's dramatic. You know, it was 2001. Like, what did you want? It's just, it's a crime drama movie.
Yeah, except in the final scene where Ethan Hawke is confronting Denzel Washington. They go up for the rooftop fight, and then all of a sudden it's like a Wes Craven slasher fic. No, thank you. I don't need to see that.
I mean, really, when I think about this movie, there's only one song that I can hear, and it's the song that they used in the trailer, and that was also very popular at the time. It's the instrumental song from the band Cypress Hill. Are you familiar with Cypress Hill?
Yes.
The instrumental song that they use when they're walking up the stairs to Smiley's place is a very good song.
It's so weird, though, because it's like, where are the lyrics? This is this is so strange, because it's so...
What's
seemingly
weird is
recognizable.
The fact that there are a lot of people on the stairs that are sort of dancing to it. Like, mm-hmm. they didn't really need to, like, make it seem like that song was playing outside there. Like, I could have just lived with them playing it loudly like that was suddenly the tone, because it worked really well for the tone of that shot and scene there.
Yeah. Mark Mancina has had a very interesting career, by the way.
Wait, is this Mark Mancina?
Mark Mancina.
Oh, so, you know, Bad mm-hmm. Boys.
Yes, Bad Boys, the first one, as well as helping to compose, helping to arrange the songs for Disney's Lion King, while Hans Zimmer was writing the orchestral score with Nick Glennie Smith and Lebo M for the African Chants. And then he's also done the score for the thriller Twister. I don't know why that's categorized as a thriller, but it is. And the action film
Twister is very thrilling.
Yes. Speed. And also the Hanna-Barbera 1990 animated film Four Jetsons, the movie.
Apparently Tarzan as well. He was a composer there.
Oh, yeah. Phil Collins did the music, though, so I just think about Phil Collins. But I don't really like Tarzan.
I don't know if I've seen it.
TBH. Oh, he did Haunted Mansion. Interesting.
Mark Mancina's got some cred when it comes to doing sort of like crime drama movies like this. Bad Boys is all you really need on the resume to get this gig.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just there's just sort of a not greatness to it, I would say. Most of the time it doesn't bother me because it's just sort of, like you said, generic action-y stuff. But then sometimes when it's supposed to be like really dramatic, it's like, this doesn't feel as great as I would like it to be, but that's not something we need to dwell on any further.
And for an action-y crime sort of, you know, genre flick like this is, there's not really as much just like senseless killing and murder as you could expect that there might be. Like there is a fair amount of shooting in parts of this movie, but it's not like they're leaving a massive body count in their wake as they go through this movie. Although I do really appreciate the raid on Macy Gray's house when the gang folk over there are shooting at them, his complete lack of hesitation from hopping right back out of the car, just completely unloading on all those people to sort of just like suppress them with firepower so that Jake can start the car and they can get out of there. But he's very much comfortable and in his element, sort of just hopping out of his car, walking towards people and just shooting the living crap out of everything around them.
Yeah, I believe that it has been said that holding your gun sideways is ineffective or less effective.
Only one of them was sideways.
Yes, only one of his two guns was sideways.
I think it's also been said that shooting two guns at the same time is a terrible idea.
Yeah, yeah, especially when they're not automatic. You're just like aimlessly spraying down random bullets everywhere in the neighborhood. Anyway, speaking of neighborhoods, what did you think of the on-location shooting?
It looked like Los Angeles.
It did.
They spent more time on the freeways than I would have expected.
It's worth it, I think, to be here. And they weren't always on the freeways. They were usually like on like those the bridges that cross the LA River on the east side.
Well, they like pulled over on the side of the highway at one point. I guess the like in my head, I don't know. I guess they're detectives, so they can go wherever they need to go. But like a particular police unit would kind of stay in like a neighborhood area, in LA neighborhood, not like neighborhood, mm-hmm. and operate there rather than going all over the place to do whatever they needed to do. But I guess he doesn't really have any rules. He does what he's got to do. Goes where he's got to go.
It does seem as if they stayed mostly around East Los Angeles.
Yes, they're not having shootouts in Santa Monica.
No, this is not Cobra, but
you see the Monte Carlo going over those little bumps over by the canals.
Yeah, the tiny bridges. But they went out of their way to make sure that they tried to operate in neighborhoods that are traditionally difficult to film inside of, apparently. But there are some still pretty, glitzy Hollywood shots in here. Notably, I would say the rooftop shot, where we are introduced to the crew that will be coming along to murder Roger. We pull up and over the edge and have this big old, you know, craning, you know, fancy shot.
I noticed this time they're next to a helipad.
Yes.
Are they at a hospital?
Unclear where they are, because there is a hospital building across this, well, several blocks away from them. So maybe it is part of that complex, or maybe it's a LA precinct building that I'm unaware of, or maybe it's a news building. It's not really clear. It's just a pretty shot where you get to see downtown, the whole skyline. So.
People have added a lot of addresses to the IMDb filming locations in here. Mm-hmm. You got your Watts. You got a lot of South Central. You got Thomas Street, Palmwood Drive. There's a lot of stuff. Oh, roof of parking lot, Grand Avenue and Venice Boulevard. Is that the one?
Sure.
Huh.
Hmm.
Huh.
It's closer to downtown than I would have thought. But
you got your Echo Park there.
Mm-hmm. That's where Roger was.
Yeah. Rise neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
No coincidence that Roger and Rye both start with R's.
Oh.
Or that might be the very definition of a coincidence. I
believe
know.
It is. But this movie is not called Coincidence Day. But this is the stuff that happens in here that seems to gobsmack Ethan Hawke the most. I would say it's probably the scene where they do the bus to take the money, and then they go immediately after that, after the shootout, to meet the three wise men, as they are called, inside of the gross restaurant. And the meeting Ethan Hawke witnesses from another table with his goblet of ice water, which always bothers me whenever they serve that inside of a wine glass. It's just like, it's not a fantastic vessel for water. Just put it in like a tumbler.
What do you expect them to have, like, multiple different types of glasses? They got wine glasses. You got your red wine glass, you got your white wine glass, and they'll just put the water in the white wine glass.
Yeah, I suppose. But Ethan Hawke is witness to all of this crime stuff and introduced to all of these crime people because this is about the corruption of the LAPD. While that might take some people aback, some very alarming news. The LAPD has some corruption issues on occasion throughout its history. This was right before apparently some scandal, the Rampart scandal, had occurred. So it's believable that there are people operating inside of the LAPD that have a sort of extrajudicial bent and money transferring hands in certain ways to appease certain crime syndicates.
Sure. I mean, these guys at the table, they are sort of heads of divisions and departments that are, you know, they've worked their way up pretty high. And I guess Alonzo is sort of the hands-on application of their wishes, amongst other things. He's part of this group, and he's clearly an outlier compared to them because they're all dudes in suits who sit behind desks probably most of the time. And you got your fun story about the old fellow there who was taking some guy to court who, you know, got out of his sentencing by pretending to be insane by eating peanut butter out of his butt.
Yes. Peanut butter.
Great. I have to type that in.
But, you don't have to type anything in. But
I do.
Yeah, this scene, you know, it feels kind of slow, especially that story, because it's not like action, you know, nobody's like killed by that or anything. But it gives you some insight into the controlling infrastructure and vested interests that are at play. Whereas if we had not had that scene with them, we would think that Denzel might just be a loose cannon all by himself. But he's definitely not that. He's part of a larger corrupt thing that is occurring. But he is also ambitious in certain ways, much like Ethan Hawke, and shares how, you know, we're not so different, you and I, in a few scenes.
Well, I found it interesting, like right before this is the scene where they try to buy crack from Snoop Dogg and then get the name of the dealer or whatever, the supplier, and then they go serve a fake warrant on Macy Gray and steal all her money and stuff. Mm-hmm. Ethan Hawke is sort of along for the ride, and he's very uncomfortable with a lot of it. But if you look at it in terms of just like the general police work, like, you know, if they had time for due process, like they probably would have done the same things. Like they found somebody who was dealing drugs. They could have arrested him, taken him in, gotten the name of the dealer. They could have gotten an actual warrant. They could have gone to her house and raided it, and they could have taken her actual money. But then, you know, he's just like, he's very casual about saying like, yeah, we got stuff to do. That's why we're moving so fast. We got to get stuff done. And basically, you're kind of sort of like, yeah, that's not the way to do it, even though this is kind of probably still what you would normally be doing. And then this is the point where he steals all the money from her and gives it to his wise men for this meeting. And also we learn to get the actual warrant for Roger's place, because he needs money. Like we get sort of half the story in this particular meeting with the wise men about how he is in deep with some Russian folks in Las Vegas for a thing that happened. And he needs a bunch of money, and he says, don't worry about it, I'm just going to cash in one of my early accounts, which we later learn means I'm going to kill Roger and take all the money that I know he's got hiding in his house, because he's a drug dealer and that's what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we as the audience think, oh, he's going to go to the bank.
Well, up until this point, he's doing like, you know, he's making bad decisions, but still sort of doing like the policeman's job. But at this point is where he turns to primarily self-interest with the things that he does after this. Even if he's still sort of killing drug dealers and bad guys, he's doing it specifically to save his own ass.
Yeah. And this is also where this charismatic, seductive leader makes a huge mistake, because he moved too fast on trying to induct Ethan Hawke and Jake Hoyt into this, because had he probably gone at a more slow, gradual pace than I'm going to get you high on PCP and then immediately have you go meet with all of these mob bosses and stuff that work at the LAPD, and then we're going to go murder somebody in cold blood to take his money, I think that might have been pushing him just a little too far day one.
Yeah, it's obviously for the movie. It's just poorly timed that he's got till midnight to get this money to the Russians. Mm-hmm. Although the Russians never expected him to be able to get the money anyway, so they were planning on killing him no matter what. Doesn't really matter. Spoiler. You would have thought he could have called up Ethan Hawke in the morning there, and rather than saying like, "Don't forget to bring your gun," like, "Hey, how about we do this next week? Because I got busy stuff going on this week, and we'll figure it out another time."
Yeah.
Unless he really thought that Ethan Hawke was going to be on his side real quick and would serve as useful backup for him to do all these things. And, you know, he kind of sort of strong-armed him into being a useful person on Roger's job. At least he gave him the credit / blame for shooting Roger.
Yeah, I mean, this is... I can see why Denzel's character might have been motivated to loop in Ethan Hawke's character at the beginning, Because, you know, otherwise maybe other things would have seemed suspicious or weird, or timing would have not worked out in other ways. But
or maybe he just literally feels like he's unstoppable. He's so charismatic he can talk anybody into doing anything. I mean, maybe that opening car ride where Ethan Hawke basically says, I'll do whatever you want because I really want to make a detective and being in your division is the way to do that. Maybe he thought he meant he'll do anything and he won't push back.
Yeah, I do like... there is a question of how much of his charisma... is the effective motivator, and how much of his threats and his brutality and his connection to the police department is a motivator too? Because as you see in the final last couple scenes of this film, when Ethan Hawke takes away his badge and says, "You know, you're not anything. I've got the evidence to turn you in," et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all the people there abandon him. It's not because he was charismatic that they were drawn to him. They feared him, the people in that neighborhood. And when they realized they didn't have to fear him anymore because he had effectively been neutered by losing his connection to the police department, then they didn't need to do anything.
Plus, it's probably fairly widespread that, you know, he owes a bunch of people money, because at least Smiley knew about it, so it's probably fair to say that that rumor had gone around a bit that if he doesn't pay, he's toast.
Yes. Yes.
Mm. Yeah, it's
or,
good.
Or like at least a Bellini with some caviar on top.
Oh, God. somebody else type that into the suggestions. I did like that... yeah, in sort of his manipulation tactics, he does oscillate between sort of like charismatic manipulation, you know, this gaslighting with this is the way things are, unfortunately, and sort of blackmail, like, you know, we fed you drugs and we have a bunch of cops who will say whatever I want them to say, so I can report back to the other folks and get you kicked out or arrested or whatever, just because that's people respect me kind of thing. So he's got like every different angle covered for the most part, aside from there's really nothing he can do to combat this whole owing $1 million to some Russians because he killed somebody in their little crime group. There's not much he can do there. Like it's a very big vulnerability for him that he needs to take care of.
Yeah. He was a little overconfident in what he was doing in Vegas, but he's obviously been in a situation where he's been quite comfortable for a while, where he has had latitude to do certain things, where he has been above reproach, where he has people who are loyal to him. He has all that stuff lined up in such a way that you could see that his faith in himself might have been stretched a little too thin. That he was a little overconfident that he could pull off what he needed to pull off with his skills and abilities because of how comfy he had things prior to this. Mm.
I mean, hey, everyone gets a little crazy in Las Vegas. It's just his version of crazy in Las Vegas is a little different than, you know.
Yes.
Mine might be.
Yes. What what happens in Soviet Las Vegas stays in you.
Yeah, I was just gonna say this is another Denzel movie where the bad guy is Russian.
pattern
in a row.
Yeah. But the stuff here, I think it's pretty interesting to also like when we're talking about the way that he tries to manipulate first with, you know, the carrot and then with the stick. He oscillates between those modes with Ethan Hawke, with Jake Hoyt throughout the film. So you go from scenes where he is like, oh yeah, we're good guys out there doing the good thing. We just, you know, gotta cut this corner because we're out for the big fish. And then I'm going to put this gun to your head in the middle of this intersection unless you smoke this reefer. That isn't really reefer. And then, you know, back to like, oh, yeah, we're just doing good stuff, catching the big fish. And then finally with Roger, that is perhaps a bridge too far for him, where we are in a situation where Roger is a bad person, and Roger knows that he is going to die, and that his money is being taken from him. But Denzel Washington just assumes that he'll be able to talk Ethan Hawke's character through it, that he can just use his charisma to motivate him through killing this old man in cold blood on his first day that he ever met either of them, which is, of course, an overreach. But this results in Denzel's like, you know, you think you can do this, I'm going to turn my gun on you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is an error because Ethan Hawke turns the gun on him, and there's a bit of a standoff. And one of the bad guys is bleeding because Denzel missed his mark a little bit with his his shot.
Yeah, it was, you know, he plans it out pretty well, and he sort of, as he says, quarterbacks the whole situation. I'd be curious what his explanation when the rest of the cops showed up was for the fact that one of his guys got shot, and then they managed to dig up a bunch of money before calling an ambulance.
Yeah.
Maybe Roger was digging up the money and then decided to take a break and sit in his chair, and that's when they raided the place.
Perhaps.
Except for all of the... Oh, no. They all signed out the equipment because they needed to be very official, so they signed out the chainsaw and the picks and the shovels and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they know that that's them.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, he's over there bleeding, but while he's bleeding, we're waiting for the ambulance. I guess we'll do some digging.
Yeah, what's also weird about this whole thing is that they got to get the story straight so that they can, you know, tell it to the chiefs and stuff. And then the police arrive, the rest of the real police arrive with the ambulance and stuff. And that is all transpiring. But Ethan Hawke is time to just contemplate things on the side of the road and then get in the car and they just drive off. Whereas I feel like an officer-involved shooting usually requires tiny bit more time for processing with people who were involved in the officer involved shooting,
going downtown and filling out paperwork and submitting evidence and things.
Yeah, I would assume, but they don't really seem concerned with that at any point.
A lot of things to do, places to go, people to see in Los Angeles, so you know they'll catch up at the end of the day.
Yeah, but this is, of course, like you said, the bathtub call. He knows he's going to kill him. He gives him a pep talk. And when I was watching the film, I was like, surely this is the end of the picture. Like, this feels like this was the moment where he's inducted into this corrupt society, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we are done.
Because he talks him down. Jake's pointing the gun at him and he says, like, no, you know, I got all these guys around you that could kill you in a heartbeat because they're loyal to me, but they're not going to shoot you because you're a good man with a good heart. You just got to learn what reality is like out here, and I'm going to protect you. I'm going to tell my guys to put their guns down, and it's going to be okay. Like, you know, don't worry about it. I got your back, too. So everything's okay. And then he doesn't really, like, completely lure him back in with his charisma, but he does at least get the shotgun out of his face and get Jake to go outside, at least comply with the finishing up of this scenario just long enough to basically say, like, that was a little, like, this dog almost bit my face off, so it's a little bit too much. We can't quite trust this guy, so I think he's going to have to go. Like, this is the end of his training day here.
Yeah, and he knows too much from this, so he can't go back to just writing tickets in the valley, as they say. So this is why he's arranging to have him murdered, which I don't know. I feel like there's something conspicuous about an officer-involved shooting that results in the officer who shot the person winding up by himself inside of the headquarters of some gang people, maybe, and then getting shot and killed. But I guess they would find the body somewhere else maybe several days later. But it was all very strange how he chose to go about executing him. Whereas I feel like if they had executed him in the officer-involved shooting scenario, like once they got him to lower his gun and they just shot him after that, that they would have been able to play that off. I don't feel like the extra effort that went into their maneuvering here really was going to work.
Mm. Well, I think the one little sticking point was the fact that they couldn't really do that because I think they'd already called the ambulance for the guy who had gotten shot. So they would have had to do something real quick and staged it real fast. They probably didn't really have time for that. But yeah, it would have been a bit conspicuous. But maybe I don't know. That was a very large shotgun in his face. There, it probably would have taken a while to find him and then a while to identify him if they had gone about their bathtub plan.
Yeah. But yeah, that's when we finish that scene, and I'm like, why is this movie still going? And then we get the card scene, and then I'm like, oh, this is why that movie's still going, because now we get the setup for Ethan Hawke's character, his revenge, I guess. Justice will be served, his vigilante justice.
Plus, Smiley in that scene like really lays out like beat for beat what happened with Alonzo in Las Vegas, which is very expository, but I didn't really mind it because it's just like they're telling stories playing cards, so it's kind of there to intimidate.
Well, also, they are chatty, just in general. It wasn't like the conversation was solely about that.
Yeah.
So
I also like that. I think part of that conversation there, and they did it in a couple different places throughout this movie, is they show that while people do business with Alonzo and they seem to be relatively close with him, they're not all on the same side. Like, these guys are clearly on their own side. They're doing this for money, and the fact that they have sort of like a basic agreement with Alonzo that he'll leave them alone / pay them for things when he needs them, but if he need, you know, vice versa, like they'll sort of use each other in a very bad way. But it's pretty clear that, like, you know, they're not keeping secrets for him. Like, those guys down there on the steps in the other neighborhood, like, say thank you, but then as soon as he's gone, start like talk trash about him because they're very tired of getting shaken down by him and stuff. But the scene at the card in the card game there, you're like, oh, who are these guys? Are they friends of Alonzo? And very quickly you're like, no, not so much. They're not even really just sort of casual friends. They're just there to do a job.
Yep.
For a blender.
Throw my tender heart in a blender.
No, don't do that. It's also interesting that they've, you know, to the point that they are not friends, like, there is a little bit of honor amongst thieves in that, like, you know, you sort of defended my family earlier, sort of just kind of coincidentally. As required by the plot of this movie, so we're going to let you live, even though we got paid a bunch of money. Like, you know, maybe we'll give that money back, maybe we won't, but, like, you know, you did something for us that was, you protected my family, so we'll let you slide on this one. Like, this is our business. And even though he says, you know, this was just business, like, Ethan Hawke is still very clearly shaken. It's just like, oh, God, this is business to you people, just, like, arbitrarily murdering whoever Alonzo brings to you and gives you 20 grand to kill.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe one of the reasons they were comfortable with letting him go was that, as he says, there is a high probability the Russians are just going to kill Alonzo anyway. So they may not feel the repercussions of allowing Ethan Hawke to leave.
Yeah, but they didn't seem like they were relieved that God, we didn't have to kill this person for Alonzo. Like, we really hate when Alonzo makes us kill people. It was more just like, we're not going to kill you. We'll probably kill some other people because that's what we do, but we're just not going to kill you.
Yeah, well, they're sociopaths, Dan. FYI.
At least two of them were. Smiley seemed to have a little bit more wits about him.
Smiley was going to kill him in a bathtub.
Yeah,
a shotgun,
but
to the face.
He was in charge of the murdering in the bathtub operation.
Just because you can plan doesn't mean that you're not a sociopath.
Head sociopathic entrepreneur.
Well, you know they say that a lot of CEOs of companies are sociopaths.
Do they say that?
The people say that.
Do they say that about CEOs of companies that don't make electric cars?
I believe they do. But if there ever was one that was on that list, my money is on the electric car one.
How much do you think you would have to pay Elon Musk to kill somebody in a bathtub?
I mean, I don't even know if you have to pay him. He might just be, like, in a mood.
He'd be like, you do this for me, and I'll help you, I don't know, move up your rocket launch to Mars by a month or so.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe it's sort of a thing where he's just like, you know what, I'm bored, and then he turns on the drill and kills somebody, like Bond villain style.
Oh, he would definitely be, like, a most dangerous
bored
game.
He named his company after a pun. It's only fair.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I guess you give him respect for the pun, but
I don't really give him any respect. But yes,
you know, he's definitely a kind of crazy rich CEO guy who would hunt human beings for sport because he's bored with everything else.
Yeah, yeah, him, maybe Larry Ellison, sort of
Bezos, maybe.
No, I don't think Bezos
might just like fly the helicopter that they're all shooting at the side of.
Yeah, maybe. Or his just might be like, let me show me the security cam footage from inside of one of my warehouses. I just want to see people suffer for hours.
That excites him?
Yes. Then he just like counts money while he's watching the security cam footage. But anyway, enough about our robber barons and their delightful quirks. The movie here really has nothing to do with the high society angle. The closest we come to it is the three wise men. Like they have connections because we got a police captain, we got a DA, and then I forget the other guy. But they're all high ups, but not like in a businessy kind of classy way.
I mean, you know, they're in the streets, but they're all wearing suits and fancy.
Yeah, they're not Eric Garcetti though. But
that's a real politician person, right? Okay, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, you can hear his voice if you are at LAX, and you can talk about how they're improving the way we fly, and it's baloney. But
I haven't been to LAX in a very long time. I find it there's not a ton of reason to go there because it's pretty easy to drive there too.
It's not great. What if we had a version of Training Day, but it was about, like somebody learning how to be like an airport cop,
a TSA agent.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's all about all the illegal stuff that they do when they're like loading up planes.
You would have to play up the you'd really have to play up the dehumanization aspect of it too, you know, the making them strip down.
Well, we don't want to stretch, you know, like believability here.
Oh no. I mean, you just make them strip down to their underwear in a giant, in a very public setting, so you can feel them up and make sure they don't have any explosives in their bodily cavities
or peanut butter. But that
well, peanut butter is not a liquid, so I think that can go through TSA.
I don't know. Wouldn't that be a scene?
Oh, God, how great would it be to do that to a TSA agent just for the reaction?
I don't know if great is the right word. It's sort
like
of
deliberately make the detector go off or opt out for a pat down and then like continue to like strip down until you can do the peanut butter thing.
See, I feel like that's kind of a Mallrats thing of like the vicious self-own of putting chocolate covered pretzels in certain places.
Eating peanut butter out of your butt to own the lips.
Yes. I don't really think that is great.
I suppose if you're doing it to get out of prison, that's one thing. If you're doing it to make a TSA agent uncomfortable, that is it's a different level.
Yeah, that's CEO of an electric car company level.
I can picture it though.
That might be the problem.
Air travel's complicated is what it is.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's really up there. This movie has I like the ending. I like the ending of it. You know, he gets his Russian mob justice. Ethan Hawke goes home, parks the car, presumably to his wife and child. And then I don't know how he explains any of the rest of the film to anyone because he has the money that he took as evidence. But
yeah, you would have thought Mr. By the Books Ethan Hawke would have taken that downtown first. Maybe he did. Who knows? Maybe he put it in an evidence locker. And he's like, I'm going to fill out the paperwork tomorrow because I am very tired.
Yeah, except the voiceover from the news, which is, of course, one of my least favorite mechanisms for communicating expository dialogue to us.
Well, at least it's done in sort of like a callback, mocky way to the thing that Denzel was saying about him earlier.
Yeah, well, but the The thing is, in the news bleep, they say that Denzel Washington was killed in the raid. So that's a little weird. And,
oh, right, because they say Echo Park in there, don't
they? Yeah. He is not mentioned in the context that he was killed in, nor is he mentioned as being, like, potentially under investigation or potentially a disgrace.
Well, you still got the three wise men. They probably covered it up.
Yeah, because otherwise quickly. Maybe the trail would lead back to them. But then that does raise the question of, like, why Ethan Hawke might not say anything about them. Which would be weird because presumably they have the means at their disposal to dispose of him, so they could go that route, I suppose.
Yeah. Do you think when he got back to his house / his regular job that he went scorched earth and he decided to, like, let me tell you everything that this guy did / did wrong and did to me in this day, and I'm going to burn this all down and just, you know, expose everything he and his crew did? Or do you think he just said, like, you know what, Alonzo's dead, I stopped this from spreading, I'm gonna call that a victory, and I'm going to keep my mouth shut and go about my business?
I think that would be perilous, because there are 4 known cohorts that were part of the murder of Roger, and they worked through Alonzo with 3 wise men, so they could all, in theory, kill him and his wife and his kid.
They probably don't have any incentive to split or keep quiet or just avoid him, do they? They only have things to lose by him being around.
Yeah, and they don't seem to like him a whole lot.
No, I don't blame him.
No, there's a delightfully tense moment where they're getting the money out of the locker, and Ethan Hawke's all like, "Oh shucks, I can't take the money. That'd be ridiculous. We got to turn this into evidence." And all
he
the other
thought they were playing around. He's like, "No, I don't want this. Do I really? No."
I don't want the last slice of pizza. You guys want it? You guys can take it. I'm not here for the last slice of pizza. That's all you guys. And then they're all like, no, you need to eat the last slice of pizza, so that way we know that you are a part of the pizza group. Because if you don't do it, then that means you're a narc.
Are you, some kind of person who doesn't like pizza?
Yeah.
Can't be trusted if you don't eat pizza.
It's cheese. Go ahead. There's literally no reason for you not to eat that. I can think of reasons. But anyway, the important part is, this is the not taking the money is a major red flag for them, because without that, as Denzel says, that they're a little antsy, because that means that he is not equally he's not equally burdened with the illegalness of things, and they would like him to be. Because
he's not part of the team in the bad context, not in the, like, rah-rah, we'll go do team-building exercises together, but, like, the, no, we all have to have the same amount of dirt on us for this to work.
Yeah. If you go out to dinner and everybody has chocolate cake except one person, they don't have chocolate cake, and you're just like, what the heck, you have to have chocolate cake, because if you don't have chocolate cake, then that means we're all the jerks who ate chocolate cake, so you have to do it. And if you don't do it, then we'll just assume that you're a bad person because you're making us look bad.
Yes. Except instead of chocolate cake, it's a dead man's money.
Yes. Blood money. It's the chocolate name of my new money. Dessert.
is it like cherry, or is it like blood orange chocolate?
Well, you would want to have something green, I guess, but, I know. It's a grasshopper pie, which is green because it's filled with horrible creme de menthe, and then you have a little raspberry coulis, and that's the blood.
I was just gonna say, like, some mint chocolate chip ice cream or something.
Well, I mean, same thing. It's green, mint, and chocolate.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah. So what? I don't see what the problem is. Aren't you gonna take the mint chocolate that I offered you? Aren't you going to be equally guilty in the mint chocolate.
Oh, I don't really like mint chocolate.
Oh, I don't like it either. But we have to take it because otherwise one of us will narc on the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
$3 million bust on your first day. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also good, too, because Denzel's just, like, so thrilled with the money that he kind of, like, kind of forgets about Jake for a little while until Jake decides to, like, stick his foot in his mouth and say, like, no, we're not taking this money.
Yeah. What, I feel they still could have gotten away with all of this and not push Jake over the edge had it not been for the, here's the shotgun, Jake. Time for you to shoot defenseless Roger. That they still maybe could have gotten out of there with mm-hmm. Jake towing the line.
And yet his, you know, he had still already made the call for the bathtub murder, which, you know, maybe he could have just, like, not shown up or something. But, you know, his argument in the car about how Roger was a bad guy who sold dope to kids, and I've been watching him operate for 10 years, and now I finally got him. Like, you know, playing the long game, like, it was still a very compelling argument from him. And then even, like, when he gets his super soft, like, whispery voice saying, like, I'm sorry, poor child, that I had to put you through this. It's very tough out here, but, you know, this is what it is. And, like, you gotta be part of the team. You gotta run with us, or you gotta get the hell out of here. Like, there are two speeds here. You gotta be in, you gotta have some dirt on you, or you gotta just, you know, go find a more casual job that you're more comfortable doing.
Yeah. Wolf pack.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta howl. Don't make rooster noises. But it was a very compelling, you know, performance by Denzel in that car, saying, mm-hmm. like, you know, when you can square what's in your head with what's going on in the real world, quote unquote real world, which is just, you know, his corrupt world, then you'll be able to sleep at night, which clearly he can sleep just fine. But Ethan Hawke is not going to sleep probably super well that night.
No.
Although he didn't sleep the night before either because he was super nervous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do laugh a little bit when you see him, like, angry face riding the bus, and, like, he puts the clip in his gun and, like, racks it, and it makes that sort of, like, echoey sound. Like, if there was anybody else in that bus, they'd be like, the hell is this dude doing back here loading a gun?
Yeah, you'd think the bus driver would be like, what was that noise?
sir, please no firearms.
Yeah, they got the big mirror up there, so they can see that kind of stuff. But
although he's got his badge on his belt there, and he leaves his bottom button of his shirt unbuttoned, so you can see the badge pretty well. Even when he's supposed to be doing, like, undercover work, like when he's chasing Snoop Dogg, and be like, "Hey, come back! I promise, I didn't mean to."
Hey, come back! I'm the police. Go easy on me. It's my first day.
Yeah, he's got his hood up over his head like he's trying to be undercover, but, like, his shirt's flapping in the wind, and his badge is right there. It's like, dude, like, pick one. What are you gonna do? Like, at least go, like. Alonzo's got his badge, like, on a necklace in his pocket that he can pull out when he feels like it, but he's not wearing it on his belt the whole friggin' time.
No. No. Alonzo knows how to play cool.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He's a cop when he wants to be a cop, and he's discreet and just a random guy with a gun when he feels like being that.
Yeah. With a Monte Carlo.
Mm-hmm. I love, there are a couple of points in this movie where you're just like, the intimidation and the menace is just very apparent and overwhelming, and you don't even have to say it. Like, you know, the idea that he leaves his car outside that diner just unlocked in that neighborhood is just like, people know who I am. They're not going to screw with me because they know what I'll do to them. And then the very slow driving into the dangerous neighborhood where they're talking about how dangerous the neighborhood is and, you know, looking around and the people are staring at him and they're, you know, making the pigeons go so everyone knows he's there. Like, up until that point, you kind of know, like, he's dangerous and he's got issues and he's going to do whatever he needs to do. But it's not really until that point where you kind of realize, like, the magnitude of the person you're dealing with, where you're just like, oh, crap, I am in way, way over my head with this crazy guy.
Yeah, and also when he meets Eva Mendez and we meet the son, were you like, oh, here's just some random kid? Or were you like, this is Denzel and Eva's child?
Yeah, clearly yeah. His child.
Yeah. So that was, oh, speaking of, horrible actor. poor kid.
They're just like, yeah, he kind of looks like he could be Denzel/Eva's kid. But yeah, like when he throws the rocks at the window and you can see the kid like, and turn and step and put my face to window and mm-hmm. hello, Ethan Hawke, what are you doing here? It's like, oh boy.
What really bothers me is when they're like, when Ethan Hawke like does a barrel roll to go across the living room when there's gunfire going on, and he's talking to the kid, and the kid's like, "What is happening? I feel like I am going to be placid and totally fine."
You'll be shocked to know that this young boy is in this movie and no other movie.
Mm. Hard to imagine. You know, sometimes we can be hard on child actors because they're not seasoned professionals. I'm sure this kid really tried or whatever, but it just can throw you out of what is otherwise a very dramatic moment in the film. The rest of his acting would have been fine, except for that just like you're in the middle of a gun shootout and you're acting like you just woke up from a nap. Like there's something very strange happening here.
Yeah.
Literally no tears at all.
Well, you know, I'm sure he's not unfamiliar with the sound of gunfire.
Probably not in his living room, I would assume.
I'm trying to tell if this looks like him on Twitter. Kygel Jolly. He has 4 tweets.
Oh.
He joined in 2012, and he hasn't tweeted since. I guess his last tweet was 2017, but one tweet in 2012, one 2015, one 2017.
Okay. Why are we stalking this child actor?
I just Googled him to see what there was about him, and there's literally nothing. There are 2 tweets.
Okay.
And then a retweet.
All right. I mean, let him do his thing.
I don't know what his thing is. That's what I'm trying to find out.
Okay.
He was a young boy in 2001, so he's probably adultish now.
I would assume. That's generally how time works. But I think that says all there is to say on this.
It's a good movie. It's not your typical cop drama type movie, even though there are a lot of themes. You know, you got your corruption, you got your old cop who's been corrupted by the environment / his own greed, and you got the young up and coming idealistic kid who's going to set him straight. But very different story and a very, very well made story. I like it.
And you know, while there have been many other films about corruption and police precincts and LA police precincts, I would say I like that this movie feels more intimate because we are with a very small group of people in a very tight time frame. So you don't have a lot of the stuff where in other police movies, people just disappear for months or weeks or whatever, and then you get back to it, and it's just like, well, it was a weird editing cut that we just came back into this dramatic moment now. Like, you know, L.A. Confidential, where they're trying to figure out where the corruption is, etc. With this one, you don't have like the whole entire like institution and like a bunch of characters investigating different angles and all trying to like figure out what they know together and meet back up again or anything like that. This is really just Ethan Hawke and Denzel Washington in a car for most of the runtime of this film, going around and doing stuff. In what is, in the terms of this movie, a day.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I like this car. I should get one of those.
I don't think that's a wise investment.
No? You don't think a cool old school Monte Carlo would be a good car?
No.
Seems to be relatively bulletproof.
Well, I mean,
not the windows.
No.
But they didn't die.
Well, that's not really my metric for bulletproofness. So whether or not I have been killed inside of a car by a bullet. But I could see how this car would be cool in certain contexts. But I want more creature comforts and the ability for the engine to start sooner.
That was a little bit convenient. But, yeah. You know,
they hadn't exactly earned the engine is finicky moment that they were going for there.
Definitely not. No.
No. This was not, you know, Chekhov's Monte Carlo, where the engine didn't start in the first act. et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I like this movie.
I like this movie too.
I don't like how hot it is in here.
Me neither. And so the sun sets on another exciting defocus training day.
Thus concludes episode 2 of Denzel Wagestinkstenstun.